All right, everybody. Welcome to The Wild Bunch, episode 2, with your hosts,
Joe Hernandez
and Gregory Valdez.
How are you doing today, Greg?
I am doing excellent, Joe. I'm glad that you asked.
That's good.
It's funny because we've spent quite a bit of time together today already.
But I hadn't asked him how he was doing, so I'm glad that you're doing well today.
Thank you. It's still a pretty good day, despite spending this much time with you.
That's messed up. So, today we kind of have an interesting topic, one that I at least hold dear to my heart. We're going to talk about prescription drugs.
Yes, and not necessarily about recreational use.
No.
But we can talk about that a bit as well.
We may or may not get into it. We'll see how the conversation goes.
We're talking today about prescription drugs and how there has been this overload of reliance on prescription drugs in our lives to go ahead and take care of things that may or may not be needed taken care of that way.
Right.
So I think there are a lot of drugs prescription-wise that are required to live daily lives and to keep up your health. If you have high blood pressure, for example, you should probably be taking something accordingly if a doctor really says so.
Now, the trouble with that is, you know, so many doctors have so many different opinions and lines of thought when it comes to prescribing these drugs. One thing that I've always found interesting is, and may or may not know, but it's every single clinic, every single doctor, they have to meet a quota of what drugs are actually prescribing every single month based off of insurances, based off of reimbursements, all that kind of stuff, which I always found kind of interesting. Like, oh, okay, I better prescribe 300 high blood pressure medicines at the end of this month, or I might not get reimbursed my full amount.
What? So it's like earning your NASCAR patch?
Pretty much. And
you have to do what the sponsor
exactly,
tells you.
Exactly. That's exactly how it works. And the crazy thing is, a lot of healthcare works that way. For example, so I work in physical therapy. I'm a student right now. I'll be done this upcoming May. But even I have experience, you know, higher ups in a clinic come down, have a meeting with us, look at the metrics, go over how we're doing and say, well, you know, okay, you're doing well in this and this, but we need you to start billing more for this type of treatment or this type of treatment. So it's kind of interesting because a lot of times these higher ups aren't necessarily people with healthcare degrees or healthcare know-how, but based off of money and influx of money, they're gonna tell a clinic, well, you need more of this and less of that, which so kind of like takes away some autonomy for the clinicians, nurses, PTs, OTs, all those people working with healthcare.
Like the suits versus the white coats.
Exactly. That's exactly how it is.
And everyone has their own motive.
Yes.
That's not good.
No, it's not good at all. It's absolutely not good.
I'm glad Joe here jumped into his background because Joe is, in this episode, really not just coming from this perspective, but really does a, as I know him, he does a good job of reflecting and sharing the background of a prescriber, as a healer, somebody who understands this world and knows exactly what's going on in the background. I am a user. So I'm the one who gets the drugs and has dealt with that in my past. And that's my perspective versus or in conjunction with his perspective today.
And you know, Greg, not only that, but I mean, I've kind of felt a little bit of the other end of the spectrum just recently, actually. So about a month or two ago, started going to the dentist. They started noticing I had my blood pressure was higher than normal.
Right.
And I kept checking it. It was still pretty high. I got concerned, so I went to the doctor. Doc prescribed me a blood pressure medication. So I've been taking that for about the past 2 months now, I guess I would say. Very, very tiny, small dose. Pretty much the thing was, I'm going to give you a small dose. There's things that you can do to reverse it. I asked him, is it possible to get off this medication permanently? He said yes. We didn't get into much of how to do that. His whole thing, and a lot of doctors' things I've noticed, is diet and exercise. And that's good and that's true, but that's all they're going to tell you. And it may or it may not be because they're bad doctors. I have a great doctor. It's really because of time. They have 10-15 minutes with you, so they need to give you something and get out of there.
let's go back to that day.
Okay.
Because you've told me about it, and sure. I think it's worth repeating and sharing more about how exactly you felt and what happened. So you're at the dentist.
Okay.
And it's just a routine checkup, uh-huh. You know, getting those cavities filled. You've been yes. eating too much sugar.
I didn't have cavities. I haven't had a cavity since I was 7. just so the audience knows.
Okay, yeah. If you could, we would show you the inside of his mouth to prove it. And I'd let you all look. But, you know, maybe we can post a picture with this.
We can later. It'll be the title picture cover for this episode.
I think that's a thing. So, as somebody who's really focused on their health in the past year,
uh-huh.
and we talked about it a bit in the last episode.
Sure.
And the recreation of the self or the improvement of the self.
Right.
It's been a big focus of yours. And I can really, really think of times in the past year where you have been able to come to me and say, this is a new milestone in my improvement. Uh-huh. This is another milestone.
Yeah.
Whether it's through weightlifting or working out or nutrition. Joe is really big into the macros, micros, and uh-huh. I know nothing about that. So when we go to a grocery store together, I literally have him look at the back of packages for me to tell me more about that shit.
Oh, he got on me, you got on me today about it, because I was reading everything I was about to buy, and you're like, you're just reading everything. I was like, well, yeah, I want to know what I'm getting. I want to know what I'm putting inside myself.
If there's too many words on a package, I stop reading. It's true. I look for big, bold words that say things like none of this and very little of that.
No fat.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Unless it's ice cream. Okay. In that quest for improvement,
sure.
You get to this doctor's appointment, this dentist appointment, and he tells you you have high blood pressure.
Right.
So take us through that moment.
Man, I mean, I already, I've been studying this for a while. I know what high blood pressure can do. And, you know, for the audience viewers, you know, if you get it checked and it's slightly high or a little high, definitely try and keep it under control, because it is something that they do call the silent killer. So high blood pressure is one of the leading risks for heart problems, cardiac disease, heart attack. Stroke is a very, very, very big one. That's number one for risk factors of it. So it's not something that should be taken lightly. If you do see that your blood pressure is pretty high, you should do something about it.
What is a high blood pressure?
Okay, so anything, so there's two numbers for blood pressure, right? It's the top number and the bottom number. Usually it used to be 120 over 80 is normal.
Okay.
Now they change those guidelines, however. So now they say that anything less than 120 over 80 is normal. 120 over 80 now is considered slightly elevated. 130 over, well, now it kind of differs. It gets into like the different metrics of it, but basically if you're in the 130s over 80s, or especially if that bottom number is in the 90s, you definitely have some high blood pressure there.
All right.
If you're hitting the 140s, the 150s, you gotta do something pretty quick as you can at least. I mean, you're not gonna die or have anything detrimental happen to you, especially if you're young, but it's something that you wanna keep in mind and not let it linger there.
And now is the time to take care of anything like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you wanna take care of it now, because it's gonna be easier to reverse things when you're young as opposed to when you're 40, 50, 60 years old and you don't have as much energy as you used to. You can't go and run 3 miles every other day like you used to, and then you got this guy throwing a bunch of pills at you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is supposed to not be fun.
No, it's not fun at all. No, yeah, not at all.
So, he comes in the room, and he tells you your blood pressure is what?
Okay, so when I got there, I was very nervous, so it was actually pretty high. The first reading they did, 156 over 90, and I was like, oh, shit, you know, that's bad.
Had you taken your blood pressure in the past few
yes.
months before then?
No, few months, no. Every time that I had done it, the past couple months, we would do it, like, in class, just practicing around, and it would be around 130-ish over 80. And I always thought, like, it's probably, like, nothing, no big deal.
Yeah, like, I'm a PhD
student. I'm sure I'm
student.
Okay. Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter, you know what I mean? Like, I exercise. I felt that I ate pretty well. So back when I went to the dentist, I had gone twice. It was in the 140s over 90-ish around there.
Okay.
So went to the doc. I was nervous. 156 over 90-something. Took it a second time. 140-something over 80-something. Took it a third time. 135 over like 85.
So you're averaging a good 140.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that was kind of where I was lingering at, which was higher than the 130s that I was maybe months before. So something definitely was changing. After that, we talked to him. You know, he asked me, you know, do I have any problems, feel any symptoms? Absolutely not. I didn't feel a thing. I feel completely normal, completely fine. Wouldn't be able to tell a difference in my health. Haven't been sick in the past year, so everything was good to go. So he decided to put me on this medication, gave me a small dosed medication. Actually, it was funny because he had a student with him. And the student wanted to give me this one specific type of medication. And I already knew in my mind going in, because of course, you know, I know about these medications. I already knew in my mind this was not something that I wanted to take because of some of the effects that it had. But it is the go-to medication to give when someone has high blood pressure.
The easiest.
The easiest,
passive, yes. Least resistance for a prescriber.
Pretty much. It's like the go-to, you know what I mean? They have high blood pressure, you're gonna think this.
But in that, on that note, it's also like, using a hammer that's far too big for the project.
Yes, because of how
you can be precise. Yes, exactly. But, you know, let me just pull out this big one and get the nail on the head the first time.
But to her defense, she was a student. You know what I mean? Like, that's the correct answer on an exam. If you're going to be like, your patient has blah, 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 high blood pressure, you're going to go for this certain type of medication. The doc, I didn't want it for exercise reasons because it does some things with your heart rate that I didn't like too much. The doc actually came up with an even better reason not to give it to me. He was like, he's kind of young. I don't want to give him to that for one specific reason. More than likely, someone this young is going to be sexually active. This type of medication will limit your ability to get an erection.
Joe, that's where I was going to ask about next. I'm really? Sorry. That I have no defense. Literally nothing that I can
say. That was the thing, and I was like, dang. I was like, I definitely do not want that. Luckily, this other medication does not have that effect, and I still work. Everything is A-okay down there.
I will take your word.
But yeah, so he put me on a low dose, something that it's not even the beginning dose that they give to people. It's pretty much more of a supplement as opposed to an actual dosage of medication. So I like the way he handled the situation.
Thank you for sharing, Joe. That we've hit on a few things that lead perfectly into the meat of our topic today.
Sure.
For one is this prescription of something that doesn't necessarily need to be prescribed. Obviously, your lower dosage is something that needed to happen.
And at first, I was very dismissive toward it. Now I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? And I have made the appropriate changes to where now when I check it, it is getting closer to normal with every single week I've been noticing with the changes that I've made.
And we'll get to that in the latter half of our episode. But first, it's this idea of, there are sometimes prescriptions we do not need.
Right.
And in this case, there's at least a higher dosage you did not need.
Yes. Or a whole separate class of medication that I did not need or would not really benefit from. Or the effects would be worse than the benefits.
Oh my, that's another big chunk of why we're talking about this today. In my own experience in being prescribed medications, and I like your mention of sexual arousal problems and issues, because the medication I was on was at least supposed to affect that.
Okay.
And so for me, and I'll go ahead and dive in a little bit more, it was about August of 2017, I want to say. It feels like it was a lot longer.
Was it that long ago? Or was it that close ago?
I guess so. It feels like I was on these medications for a lot longer.
Man, it feels like forever ago, dude.
So I've been off these medications now for going on 3-4 months. And preface this whole conversation by saying that I now see, and with the proper guidance and with the actual weaning off of the medication and now to 100% off of it, that I did not need to be on these medications. So back in August of 2017, I went ahead and saw a psych psychiatrist.
Before you mention that, can you kind of give the audience just a depiction of what types of medications you were on?
I'll go back into it. I do want to point out the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist. Sure. Because, again, what is something you need versus what is something you don't?
Right.
The prescriptions, leaving this appointment, I ended up being prescribed, were a devy of antidepressants, mood stabilizers, and clonazepam and Vyvanse. So we went through a couple of different changes, but I think it's best to narrow it down to four that I was on consistently throughout this time. One was Lexapro, which was specifically supposed to help me with any sort of bipolar 2 symptoms. And along with that was escitalopram, and that is specifically a mood stabilizer, which is supposed to be hand in hand with something like Lexapro. It's almost like a antidepressant with something that's supposed to stabilize any mood fluctuation. The funny thing about that second prescription is that it's also prescribed for epilepsy.
Right.
And then clonazepam, which was supposed to be something that I had just in case I had panic attacks or the like flare up. 30 a month, one a day, but I had that prescription filled out the whole time. And so it was supposed to be something that was used just in case of an emergency, but I used that prescription to the bottom every month. And then finally, Vyvanse, which is in the family of Adderall or Focalin, and it's slightly different, and they make it the way they do so that it's harder to abuse.
But basically, it's prescription meth.
Exactly. There's no beating around the bush there. That's exactly what it is. And I can only speak for myself.
And to clarify, listeners, it's not actually meth, but the class of medication that Adderall, Vyvanse, that all those drugs are, is the same class of drug as methamphetamines on the street would be.
You know, I thought there was going to be some sort of punchline there, but that's...
No, that's just pretty much it.
Dead on serious, yeah. And right. And so, the Vyvanse, right, seems like an odd combination and a kind of a...
It is.
A dangerous and scary cocktail. Now, let me tell you, folks, it was. That was supposed to be an uptake inhibitor for the Lexapro, enhancing its effects and giving me more of a lift in my daily mood and attitude. So, I was on these four medications at the same time.
And they didn't just try one at a time or anything, huh? They just gave you four all at once.
Perfect. That first time in August that I went into this appointment, and within 15 minutes was walking out with the prescription to the first three.
Dude, it's that 15 minutes. I swear, I think they time it for 15 minutes. I think that's the way they schedule their appointments, most physicians.
Most on the half hour.
I'll tell you that's how long it took for my appointment when I went.
And you went to the dentist.
No. The dentist was when I found out I had a high blood
pressure. Oh,
when I
went to the actual doctor. Special,
yeah, yeah. Okay. Dentist won't give me medication for that.
Oof, I'm in the wrong business. That's what it comes down to. This 15-minute rigmarole where
Right. You're
in and out, you're in and out, and you're basically a part of a process. Uh-huh. If not, what is being processed? Like meat in a factory.
Sure.
And I don't want to be that vulgar with the imagery here. I really think that there are great practitioners out there, and I don't want to discount the practitioners I had at the time. But it's come to the point where insurance and how many people they have to see and Yes. All these other outside sources coming down on the process with their own motives affecting the attention to detail.
No, and I'm glad that you brought that up, Greg, because you are right. It 80 to 90% of the time, it is never going to be the physician or the healthcare worker's fault. I genuinely believe, having met a good number of them, having worked with a lot of them, most people that get into healthcare, it's a dirty business and it's very, very hard work. Most people that do it because they genuinely want to provide help and care for individuals that need it. But like how you mentioned, insurance companies, big pharma, government regulations, all these things set down so many rules and guidelines and red tape that they're forced to have to practice under these certain stipulations. So not only are the patients in this meat market, meat factory that you're talking about, but the clinicians are too.
Yeah. And they still got those white coats on.
They still got those white coats on.
Got a lot more blood on.
Exactly.
Them. Okay, I said I wouldn't be vulgar with the imagery. Now, what I learned being on this medication and how it nets out where I realized I did not need it. It takes being at the end of the process to know how much you did not need it.
Right.
So that is my first point of caution.
Let me ask you this, Greg. How did you feel on this cocktail? If you could somehow describe it.
It was a roller coaster of emotions and feelings and attitude.
Okay.
Every day.
So,
and also filled with paranoia, and okay. I will describe more as long as you ask away, and filled with paranoia, self-doubt, and, you know, even to that point, this general cloud and haze over everything constantly.
You know, it's interesting that you say those things, though, because those are a lot of the things that these specific medications are said to fix.
Oh, that's a bingo! Yes! Exactly! It, for me, at least in my experience, and after a lot of time really inspecting these sort of thoughts and emotions and being at the back end of it all, it made things worse.
Uh-huh.
And I cannot emphasize enough how much it made things worse. And I didn't think I was gonna get this serious, but looking back on it, there is so much I wish I did differently. Just because of the chaos that was already going on at the time.
Right.
And none of this helped. So That's where it really involves more than just wanting to take care of your issue, whatever it is, the easy way.
And you know, it's offering some outside perspective to the listeners out there. Being with Greg on this journey, you know, I remember the day you told me you went to the doctors, got the prescription, started taking them. I kind of noticed a change in you too. You know, there was definitely something different about the way you carried yourself, the way you thought of things. And it was always the way you described how it was never consistent. That's how it always felt at the same time too.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember. You remember one day we were talking on the phone and you were feeling really bad. And I talked to you about maybe cutting the dosage in half, seeing what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that was, man, this isn't Greg. Something's going on here. And it is in no way, shape, or form my responsibility to tell anyone what to do with their medications. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. That's not how that works. But there was something off. You know, any good friend, any family member, any brother could be able to tell that.
And I can attest in hearing him tell me that and remembering it too, and knowing that's exactly when I needed to figure something else out to help me and to deal with my issues, whatever you want to call them. It's not just an issue, a stressor. It's not just one thing. It is a divvy of things that goes
Absolutely.
Into this sort of cloud. And that was when I went back to my provider and said, something has to change, and took the steps accordingly. Because if you don't do it the right way, then there's no telling what could happen. So
you cannot just stop cold turkey on these kind of medications when you've been taking them for a while.
That's a part of the cautionary tale.
Juju, yeah.
There's a right way to go about this process, no matter where you are along on it. If you haven't started a medication and it's been thought of, or somebody suggested it to you, and you haven't filled out a prescription, this isn't us saying don't go fill it out.
And this is also not us saying stop taking all your medicine right now. No way at all.
It has to be extremely thorough in whatever it is. This is two different realms of the spectrum where we're talking mental health and then very physical cardiovascular related health.
Right.
And so it's just two different
ideas. And even with my medication, I mean, my dose is so low that I don't have to worry about it. But say I was on a higher dose, I couldn't stop cold turkey either. Yeah. There is a process of weaning off medications like this. And most medications are, in fact, like that.
But it's about doing the research and actually providing yourself the diligence, due diligence, and finding out more. Because a part of what I want to go ahead and emphasize as a part of my story here is, what could I have done differently in figuring out more about the self, myself at the time, to not rely on these things as much? Not because I shouldn't have told myself, oh, I don't need this.
Sure.
But did I do anything else to alleviate these symptoms?
Uh-huh.
Looking back on it, I'd say absolutely not. I thought I was,
uh-huh,
but still, absolutely not.
So are you saying, let me see if I'm getting this right, saying that the prescription drugs were maybe more so a cover-up to the symptoms as opposed to a solution to them?
For me?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm like careful in answering that, sure, because it's one of those things that being in the place I was and in that state of depression, I don't want to call it being in clinical depression.
Okay.
But being in a state of depression, momentary right, or not,
uh-huh,
I at the time thought that was the best way of handling the situation.
Okay.
But it was also the path of least resistance.
Absolutely.
For me,
uh-huh,
not just the provider.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was, I remember coming out of that actually being excited.
I remember you were excited.
I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I got this, I got that. We're gonna nip this in the bud. We're good. Shit, we're on the path to some greener pastures.
It's funny the opposite reaction. I got my medication, I was like, fuck, I have a medication now. This sucks.
It's the perfect juxtaposition to explain why you have to really figure out different avenues to deal with these issues.
You know, that you mentioning that though, I think that is a lot of the way that Western medicine is thought of. Have you ever heard of the term allopathic medicine?
Not until you just said it about 3 seconds ago.
Okay, so allopathic medicine is kind of the line of thought that medical practitioners use over here in the Western Hemisphere, United States, Canada, all that good stuff. The idea is, it's an idea of opposites.
Okay.
In other words, you feel depressed, okay, we're gonna give you something that alters, either ups those chemicals that make you not depressed. You know what I mean?
Roger that.
You have high blood pressure, we're gonna give you a chemical that makes your arteries a little bit wider, now you have low blood pressure. Not fixing the root of the problem, but physiologically causing the opposite to happen inside your body so the symptoms are gone. And that is kind of the main way that Western medicine is thought out. As opposed to Eastern medicine, they're all about healing the source of the problem, whether it be, gut, the digestion, activity. A lot of it actually is healing of the soul before they even get to the body over there.
There's one level we can deal with the problem, but then there's usually a root.
Absolutely. And allopathic medicine will rarely address the root.
It's a very checks and balances idealism that Western society has altogether.
Well, the thing is, it works. You take a medication for high blood pressure, you're not going to have high blood pressure. It absolutely works, and it sells. Big Pharma, these pills go for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Insurance companies, of course, mitigate that, but you know, each pill that you get is made for less than a dollar half of the time. So imagine the money that these pharmaceutical companies are making.
So Joe, you're not trying to sell me on that holistic juju?
I personally believe that an ideal practice of medicine should incorporate both. because there are a lot of people that go so hard on the holistic juju, and I'm doing air quotes, by the way. they go so hard on the holistic juju that, no, dude, you're in the red. You need to get some pills for this, bro. Like, there's no turning back on this. You know what I mean? But I think that there has to be a balance. You know, what I've been trying to do, okay, I'm going to take my medication, but I'm going to do all my other things too to try and get this under control.
Now hold that thought. You know why?
Okay.
Because it's time for a word from our sponsors.
Oh my God. I love today's sponsor, by the way.
Oh, great people, great family, local to San Antonio.
Yes.
And can't support them enough.
Dude, I tell you, I got a gallon of ketchup there the other day for like $4.
Shut up.
Yes, $4. God. Damn. I don't know what I'm gonna do with all this ketchup.
Take it back.
Shit, I can do that.
Well, let's go ahead and take a break and hear from our sponsors. Hey, yous! Yeah, you, with the face! You ever come home from the drive-thru and you're like, whoa, they gave me way too much ketchup? Well, guess what? Here at Sal's Condiment Resale, we've got the answer. We buy your ketchup packets, your mustard packets, you know, those little salt and pepper packets that you get in the packaging with the fork and the knife and the little napkin. We buy them.
Sal, darling, I was cooking a casserole the other day, and I just have so much paprika left over. Is there anything you can do?
Lady, I don't know what paprika is, but we'll buy it.
Howdy, Sal. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I love hearing your ads on the radio, by the way. But the other day, I went to Taco Bell, and I decided to try the hot sauce. That sucker was just too dang spicy for me. Can you help me out?
Cowboy Dan, some will call you a pussy, but here at Sal's Condiment Resale, I say, we'll buy it. And not only are we gonna buy it, but we're gonna go ahead and sell you some mild hot sauce. Because we got them. Because we've had Taco Bell hot sauce, Whataburger hot sauce, McDonald's hot sauce. We've got hot sauce from places you didn't even know had hot sauce packets. Sal's Condiment Resale, you got it, we'll buy it. Now buying your soy packets from the leftover Chinese restaurant food you've been ordering every day. Sal's Condiment Resale, we buy it. And we're back. Man, I've been to Sal's recently and they've got quite the selection.
I told you it was good. So what were we talking about?
So, we're talking about allopathic medicine.
Allopathic.
And, oh, thank you. I'm glad that you're here to correct me. Okay, on the other day on Snapchat, I saw a story in one of their suggested stories.
Uh-huh.
And it literally just had a picture of a couple,
okay,
smiling as white as they could. And it said, this couple hasn't brushed their teeth in 4 years.
That's disgusting.
That's what I think of when I think of holistic medicine. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, that's disgusting.
So, okay, so tell me, what would your, like, when you hear holistic medicine, what kind of treatments or things do you imagine?
Acupuncture.
That's a perfect example.
I mean, that's really where my mind goes for some
just reason. Acupuncture. That's the most common one.
There's more.
A lot of people use it.
I mean, we're talking about somebody who would sell me some Eye of Newt.
Is that really a thing?
If you're rich.
A bruja.
A bruja. And that's where a lot of minds go, I think.
Herbs, that kind of stuff. Meditation might be considered holistic in a way, depending on who you're asking.
Anything that's going to drive you away from medication.
I think that there's a lot of merit to holistic medication. The one thing that bothers me with holistic medication is a lot of the branding and selling of it is very, very off-putting.
It's very Southern California.
It's very like, these people are weird, I don't want them to give me anything kind of thing. And this is not everyone, of course, but a lot of these people give off these vibes, you know what I mean? And a lot of more conservative people will not be open to that, even if it does work.
In all seriousness, Joe, I do think it's not that it is holistic approach, but agreeing with you in the branding, the attitude, the way something looks that diminishes any sort of professionality behind what they're selling.
Absolutely.
But it's just a selling of it.
Right.
And we're here today to tell people more about the actual approaches they can take in thinking about, let's go ahead and reuse the word, but in a different sense, a holistic approach to dealing with their issues, which could mean taking an approach that is still considering the medications they have to be on.
Right.
Such as for cardiovascular reasons, uh-huh, or arthritis, autoimmune, yes, anything that has to do with cancer-related medications and the like.
Pain medications.
Pain medication especially.
Big one.
And so there's a lot of different avenues that, yes, you might at the end of the day have to take a medication that you are prescribed, but that's not the end all to be all.
I agree.
And so you had a story in mind specifically about pain medications that you right. wanted to share.
Oh, okay. Actually, this was interesting. During the break, me and Greg were kind of discussing this, but you know, this happened literally today. It's funny because I was at work doing my thing, treating different patients, and every now and again, I'll think about the podcast. I've really been excited to record this one just because it's, you know, something I'm very close to, something I'm very interested in, something I see every single day. And, you know, most of the patients I treat in the hospital that I'm at are on a lot of medications, a lot of them. I couldn't even list half of them most of the time. They're just, you know, the nurse will come, they have their little cart with their computer. It's really interesting because each patient has like a wrist kind of tag that has like a barcode.
Yeah.
And the nurse will come, she'll take like, you know, one of those guns that you see at like cash registers. She'll scan the barcode on the person's wrist, punches into the computer. Oh, this person needs this, 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 and this. Dose given at this time, this time, this time. Everything gets documented electronically.
It's very dystopian.
It is. It's kind of weird to see. And, you know, they get this little tiny cup. And most of the time, this cup is filled with just a good cluster of different colored
it
pills.
It reminds you of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes, exactly. So the nurse will give this patient this little tiny shot glass cocktail of a bunch of prescription meds. And most often, what they'll do is they'll grab the cup, they'll slam them all in their mouth, get the glass of water, and just take them all in one go. And okay, take your medications, nurse leaves, we continue with our stuff. Today, I always pay attention, but I paid more attention this time because the specific patient I was working with, patient came by, gave her the little handful of a bunch of pills, and the woman didn't like to take them all at once. So she took them one at a time and had me hold the cup of water every time she would take it. There were 18 pills that I counted when she took it. And we were there for a good minute or so, and for some reason, just seeing her, one, she'd pop it in, drink the pill. Another one, pop it in, drink the pill. Another one, pop it in, drink the pill. Another one, pop it in, drink the pill. And it made me kind of sick inside. You know, and not in a way that I thought she was wrong or in being in that situation or messed up because she needed all these medications, but it just, seeing someone put all these different chemicals in their body, it just didn't sit well with me. Makes sense. You know what I mean? It was one of these things where I never want my loved ones to get to that point. I never want to get down to that point. I never want to see my mom drinking 20 pills and me holding the cup for her one day. I don't want that for them. And I don't believe that everyone needs to end up in that place when they get to be that age.
That's not living.
No, not at all. Absolutely not at all.
What was she on?
I couldn't say. Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, one of them was definitely a pain medication. She had had a hip surgery, so yeah, there was pain involved. There's going to be pain involved. A lot of times, it's interesting, when you're working in a hospital, especially when you're doing physical therapy with patients, they need to get their pain medications. Because if they're in so much pain and we can't do anything with them, well, it's a waste of their time. They're not going to get better, and the pain medications will help us do the treatment we need to do.
Right.
So again, it's that balance, right? And it's not to say that, hey, this person should never take a pain med. They should take it, but it should be responsible, and they should never be on it forever.
Again, that's just not a way to live long term.
But the thing that I think is saddening is people are living this way, and not only are they okay with it, but they see it as, of course, it's something they need, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they see these pills as the end-all, be-all of their health. These pills are going to be the things that keep me going, keep me healthy, keep me alive. And that's it. It ends at the pills. It ends at that little prescription note that the doctor writes them.
Jesus. That reminds me of my mom, and she has rheumatoid arthritis. So I grew up as a kid into my teens having to see her go through so many different forms of dealing with her arthritis. It's an autoimmune disease that's inflammatory related, in which your joints just don't want to gel.
So it's actually an autoimmune disease.
Okay.
So similar to HIV, although it is not HIV, but essentially your body attacks the cartilage in your joints. It believes that the cartilage in your body is not supposed to be there, so therefore it attacks it. It causes pain, it causes inflammation, causes a bunch of swelling. It's very uncomfortable because it's not just like most people that have regular arthritis, bone arthritis. It's usually in a few joints. It's usually their knees or their hips, maybe their shoulder. Most often it's going to be in the legs where they're bearing a lot of weight through. And it's simply because of degenerative changes that are happening as someone ages. Whereas rheumatoid, it's in all the joints. It can be in your fingers, it can be in your toes, it can be in your ankles, everywhere. It's actually very, very miserable. The way they diagnose it, most of the times, yeah, they do blood tests to see if they have this rheumatoid factor, but they also count the number of joints that are actually being affected. Because in regular arthritis, your whole body, all the joints should not be problematic all at once.
Right.
So that is kind of what's going on with rheumatoid.
And I grew up with her being in these waves.
I didn't realize your mom had that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
She would wake up where her whole body was in pain.
Uh-huh.
And days during winter, especially, where...
Oh, absolutely.
She couldn't move. Uh-huh. Now, my mom's got this extremely high tolerance for pain.
Okay.
So, and she's a trooper where she's been through surgeries for different things, like one after another, sure, year to year, where almost totally unrelated. So rheumatoid arthritis, she had a knee replacement, which I'll touch on in a second. And at one point, she had pneumonia. At another point, her lung collapsed like a year later from the pneumonia.
Uh-huh.
She had breast cancer and had a double mastectomy.
I did not know that either. I'm learning. So how did I not know any of these things about your mom?
And it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, everyone keep in mind.
Is it really?
It is.
Oh, wow. I feel so bad for not realizing that.
It's okay.
I should probably know that.
She's got an incredibly high tolerance for pain,
uh-huh,
and would never take her pain medication.
Uh-huh.
So I give her props for that.
Uh-huh.
But she's had to deal with a lot of different treatments for her rheumatoid arthritis.
Sure.
And I think that that has influenced her tolerance for pain to an extremely high degree because she's always had to live with it.
Right.
So in the 90s, early 2000s, in dealing with her knees specifically, for the better part of 10 years, on a monthly basis, she would go get a cortisol shot in her knees.
Okay.
And as we know now, that cortisol, as temporary as it was making her feel better and fixing it, air quotes everyone, it was slowly but surely dissolving the cartilage in her ligaments.
Yes. So one thing about the cortisol shots, people, man, especially older individuals that maybe don't have so much information or they get misinformation about these things, they love them some cortisol shots. Seriously, they want that injection in their knee because most of the time it absolutely does take the pain away. It makes their knee, whatever they're doing, it makes them feel better.
Joe, it's a steroid, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is a steroid. What it's doing is it's kind of like reigniting that inflammatory process to kind of make it seem like the bone is healing itself.
But it's just a mask.
It is pretty much just a band-aid. It is not solving the root of the issue. As soon as that band-aid wears off or it gets old and you have to take it off, it's gonna hurt again. Now, I don't mind the shots because if they're done responsibly, not something that's chronic over a long period of time, because when you're taking these shots a lot, you know, doctors, we even space them out, and they have, you know, criteria of how many times a year someone can get it. Too much of this can actually cause muscles and tendons to weaken. So you're just creating more problems if you're doing too much of it. What I don't mind about them, say for instance, I'm having a patient with a lot of knee pain and it's very, very hard to be productive during therapy because of the pain. You know, physical therapists, we do treat pain. We treat pain fairly well most of the time, depending on, you know, who you're working with. But the thing is, as long as you're treating the pain, you're not fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. I would much rather be doing the activities that are going to fix the problem than have to deal with the pain. So sometimes dealing with the pain can get in the way of being productive for the treatment.
Right.
The cortisol shot is nice because if it takes away that pain, I tell the patients, okay, now we need to run with this. This is when good work needs to be done. So by the time this shot wears off, all right, you feel a little bit better than what your baseline was prior to it.
Yes. And in part, something like rheumatoid arthritis does not have a cure.
No.
But from what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. there is a better way in managing a condition.
Well, with rheumatoid, it's different. Because I mean, it's not different. I can imagine your mom needing the shots on a fairly regular basis. Now, would she need them as consistently as she's been getting them? Maybe, maybe not, depending on how she is able to manage it herself. A lot of times, and it goes back to it, diet and exercise. That's the magic two words that everybody and likes to throw around.
That's what I'm getting to here, in which she never approached it as, you know, I could exercise more.
Sure.
And then let's get more specific.
Uh-huh.
What sort of physical therapy exercises could I have been doing
right
to better give me flexibility, uh-huh. to better help the joints, to better manage these issues that you're going to be living with no matter what?
Absolutely.
And that's what we're talking about.
Well, here. And even more specific, how much of it should I do? When should I do it? How should I eat after it, before it? There's so many questions that people have. That was one instance that when I went to the doctor and got that blood pressure medication, of course he said diet and exercise. Now, for me, that's not a problem because I'm a young individual. I have the resources. I'm intelligent enough to go do the research, find out what's true and what's false. And I have the grit and determination enough to implement those things. Now, if it's an older individual that barely knows how to use a computer, how the heck are they going to know what diet and exercise is? And what proper diet and exercise is specific to them and to their condition?
Did you just call Martha old? That's my mom's name, everybody.
No, I'm talking about older people in general. But would your mom know that information right off the bat?
No,
and exactly.
That's why I thought you were specifically talking about that. So we got very specific there, like we promised we would, in which, okay, when you have something that's very physically related
uh-huh.
as a condition, you could take medications like the cortisol.
Right.
You could even take medications after a surgery, like pain medication.
Sure.
But if you're ignoring the other possibilities and opportunities, then you're not doing yourself the benefit of acknowledging a holistic approach.
Yes.
That's what this is all about. And good, we've touched on the physical there.
Uh-huh.
And that dealt with pain, that dealt with joints, that dealt with things you can do with your body.
Yes.
And increasing your movement, your flexibility. There's yoga. There
right.
is specific physical therapy practices that you have taught me a lot about.
Right.
That involve, it's not just stretching, but it's very thoughtful.
Oh, absolutely.
Exercise.
No one's going to get the exact same medications, same dosage of medications. No one person is going to get the exact same dosage and prescription of exercises.
And so it should also be, even if holistic, specific to you.
Always specific. If it's not specific, it's not good.
So where does somebody find somebody who's going to help with that?
So this is difficult. I mean, what are you asking for? Are you talking more so about the physical stuff?
I'm talking about anything in regards to, maybe we're getting more into nutrition
okay.
here, and understanding the sort of things along with specific physical needs that one individual should have specifically for them.
Uh-huh.
And taking that now into, okay, well, sure, I can go to a physical therapist.
Right.
I can go to a one-on-one yoga instructor.
You can go to a nutritionist.
Okay. Not just a nutritionist, but pharmacist?
You could go to a pharmacist. The problem with a lot of these things is it costs money.
Okay.
A lot of people don't have the money to do these type of things. Now, there are certain services that offer great practices there, but they're very rare. And Texas, at least right now, I don't know what resources specifically are out there that offer these kind of things. For example, I was doing a clinical rotation this past summer in Colorado. And my CI, clinical instructor, boss pretty much, mentor, my OB1, essentially. he had this guy, he called himself a compounding pharmacist. I was like, what the heck? What the heck is a compounding pharmacist?
That's bougie as fuck.
It was super bougie, man, but it was cool because what this guy would do is he would have people come in, do a free consult. During this consult, he would do blood work, urine analysis, and he would, you know, look at every single aspect of what's going on inside of this person's body. Their hormone levels, their potassium levels, magnesium, everything. Everything he was looking at, these specific things. And because of his studies, he was able to determine, well, actually, this person has taking this medication, that medication. They have these hormone imbalances, these supplement imbalances. He has had enough background to be able to adjust these things and tell this person, hey, if we up your potassium with these types of foods or this and that, you will feel better, essentially. One specific example was my boss's wife had thyroid issues, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the docs were ready to take that thing out.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, they were ready to do surgery. She went to go see this guy and figured out, you know, and it's crazy stuff. Like, he can figure out if tomatoes will increase the inflammation in your body. So very, very specific, like how we were talking about. So he ended up looking at her work and everything, figured out what kind of supplements and when what dosages and with what medications she was taking, what to do, totally prevented her from having surgery.
Okay. And that is super specific.
Super specific.
If a doctor just tells me to get better diet and exercise after, I don't know, I've had a heart attack, for example.
Yes.
Which has not happened. I'm thinking, oh, I'll eat a banana more a day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, apple a day keeps the doctor away.
You need more than one apple.
Really?
And you can't eat an apple and then go and eat a bunch of junk food and McDonald's and processed foods all on top of that. It covers everything up.
But it's a metaphor that's been around for a very long time, so it must be true.
I want to say that metaphor was made by apple sellers.
Branding.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, spot on. So we've talked about the physicality and what you can do to gain a more holistic approach. There are things you can do if we want to be more specific about the exercise. There is specifically things that you could, right, focus on, whether it's from somebody who's an instructor, somebody who's into personal fitness,
right,
somebody who's an actual physical therapist-related professional, who can be very specific with you.
Yes.
And then there's not just nutritionists, but those who can really analyze and, despite the costs, tell us more about ourselves specifically and what sorts of foods, things that we might even think are good for us.
Right.
But we might have to limit.
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty good.
And it's a lot. And, you know, that being said, Greg, you know, mentioning all this, it is putting a lot of responsibility in all these providers, the nutritionists, the pharmacists, the physical therapists, the physicians, the nurses, and all that. But really, what people need to realize is if they want specificity, they need to get specific with themselves. They need to take hold of their health and well-being on their own level. They can't expect a doctor who only sees them for 15 minutes every few months to be able to take care of them. People need to be empowered to be able to take care of themselves, find the information they need, find the practitioners that they like to work with, and actually implement what is recommended to them if it's something that is doing them well.
Right. And I think there's a lot of different resources now that make this so much easier than it used to be.
Oh, way more easier.
And yes. One, a lot of it does have to do with self-identity and reflection.
Yes.
We talked about it in our first episode, but we didn't really get into this side of things. Which, okay, holistically, when we're thinking of how to improve ourselves, it's one thing to think about attitude and positivity and what we want to project mentally to go ahead and improve our lives.
Right.
But then we actually have to do things physically.
Yes.
To help improve that mindset. Exercise and diet, and then going to layer down specifically what sort of exercise and diet works for us.
Right.
The resources, especially online, are vast and innumerable.
And sometimes you can get lost in the sauce with those resources.
I was going to say, that doesn't mean go down a WebMD hole.
Oh, yeah. It can get pretty bad.
I've got a brain tumor.
I will say this. My health, well-being, and fitness journey has been going on. I will say going on concretely for about 4 to 5 years at this point. And I have tried all different types of exercise styles, all different types of eating styles, like you name it, I've probably tried it at least once or twice sometime in the past. And it's been a lot of trial and error and learning more things, realizing this may be better than this, this is more optimal than this, and this was just completely wrong and wackadoo and I should probably not do that.
It takes more than just one attempt in anything.
Absolutely. And we're always evolving and reshaping our identity to fulfill our needs.
Speaking of mentality, that is something we touched on earlier in the episode. For me and that quest for bettering my mental health, it wasn't just about getting off the medication or tweaking it or anything like that. It took a lot more in like self-guidance, self-reflection.
So can you give maybe like a specific example of something you would do for this?
Well, first of all, the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist is super important. So a psychiatrist is somebody who prescribes. A psychologist is somebody who listens.
Right.
And helps you really deal with these issues. So first of all, it was figuring out that I needed to rely less on the psychiatrist and more on the psychologist.
Okay.
In which there's an avenue to talk through these issues, talk through the stressors that are giving me anxiety, making me manic, making me really look at the world in a skewed way that jumbles everything up to begin with.
Right.
A large part of that is meditation. And that sounds like, well, okay, I'm just gonna sit here and hum.
Meditation's a tough one to sell because it sounds weird. For someone who's never tried or never attempted it, they're gonna picture the weird hippie dude with the long dreads that smells kind of funny, which is usually not the case.
Well, I would say he usually does smell funny.
No, yes, but I mean usually not the case that this is the specific type of person that meditates.
How do you meditate?
Oh, there's so many different ways to meditate. I like to divide it into two categories myself, static meditation and dynamic meditation. So static being like how you were describing, you could sit down, you could lay down. Basically, you're not moving. It's static. You're staying in one spot. And if I could put it in a nutshell, it's just a clearing of the mind.
Got it.
Dynamic meditation, you're doing the same thing, except you're adding movement with this. It could be through dance. Dance is a very, very good one because if you find a nice song playing and you're dancing, realize, you know, think about what you're thinking about. Half the time, you're not thinking about anything. You're just enjoying the dance.
Not thinking about anything.
Exactly.
Is probably one of the most specifically important things I would want to take out of what I had to deal with on my journey.
Is not thinking about things.
Not thinking about things.
And it's so much easier said than done.
Despite what it might seem like, that's probably one of the most important points of meditation.
Right.
And I can't emphasize that enough. Music is extremely important as humans, as people who are very auditory, visual related. Music is a big factor. As somebody who's creative, it's also using my creativity as an outlet to talk about the things that I can't talk about verbally with my words to another person.
Sure.
Whether it's through drawing, a large part of it came through painting. And being able to very viscerally put down an idea on canvas that said what I wanted to say but couldn't.
So that's a great point, Greg, because that, to me, I would describe that as a form of dynamic meditation, painting.
Damn.
Yeah.
Eventually, that led to storytelling. I've always been a storyteller, but then once I was able to work through these different levels of meditation and make it static, drive into dynamic, I was able to actually use that creativity to tell the story of all of this, I would say further healing me, if you will. I know it's a very loose word in this sense, but what I mean is making me, myself, more capable of dealing with these issues mentally.
Sure.
And it's through that process of different forms of static to dynamic meditation that you just discussed, in conjunction with speaking to people, learning to work on my vulnerability, being more in touch with honesty and the truth of what my thoughts are, I wouldn't have made it this far without any of that. And so, concretely, it is that process that has gotten me to the point, and not to discount it, because it has been a large chunk of it too, diet and exercise, that has gotten me to the point where I have other ways of dealing with these things in my life besides medication. And we're talking about mental health.
Right.
Which also relies on everything physical that we talked about.
Yes. Hence the term holistic.
Ha! Damn.
So you can brush your teeth while you do this though, right? You've been brushing your teeth still?
When I don't forget.
Good. I'll take that.
So, all in all, we have really covered a lot of ground here, but at the same time, we're barely scratching the surface.
Oh, there's so much we could talk about this.
And guess what, everyone? There's so much more we're going to talk about. I think, go ahead and, in recapping what we've discussed today, there's a lot of different things that we rely on prescription-wise, people telling us we need to do specific things, and then we just stop there. And I shouldn't even say specific. They just tell us generally what we should do to improve our lives, and then we stop there. And that goes back to your example of diet and exercise. In the second half of today's episode, we talked about, okay, what more specific can we do that enforces the improvements we're looking for?
Right.
To go ahead and either replace or work in conjunction with the things that we are prescribed.
Right.
We're going from general to specific to better improve our lives physically and mentally. And somebody who has had to deal with the mental side of things, and Joe who has had to deal with the very physical side of things, when, you know, there's nothing wrong with Joe's brain. But he's got a bum ticket.
For the most part.
And so, these are the sorts of things that we're hoping you take away from today's episode and realizing that there's a lot more to explore. Don't stop at the general. Go beyond that and think in deeper thought about what sorts of things that would work more specifically for you and help improve these things that are issues in your life.
And you know, if any of you guys have any questions, if you want to hear more about Greg's story, if you have similar stories that you'd like to share, feel free to reach out to us. You know, you have our Instagrams at advertisingdude, at jhearn137. If you need any tips or ideas for resources, I can most definitely offer you them, or if not, find them for you if you are struggling with anything or just want some more specificity for you to empower yourself with your own health and well-being. Be very happy to help.
We're here to help you find that way. And as a little bit of a preview, this season, as we go on, we're going to be breaking into some other topics that are be super fucking exciting.
I'm really excited about all of them.
Great. We got music.
Music is a good one.
Art. We're thinking of entrepreneurship, hustlers, power couples, and all this realm of things that you would not think of, but you're always thinking of.
We're also going to be bringing a few different guests onto their show that are, you know, truly amazing people. So we'll get to hear their sides of stories and perspectives on these topics as well.
So, until next time, this is The Wild Bunch with your hosts,
Joe Hernandez
and Gregory Valdez. Thank you, and have a good one. Hey, I don't know about yous, but, you know, there's been times when I've had too much leftover condiments. And you know what? I never knew what to do with them until I opened up Sal's Condiment Resale. Guess what? You got extra ketchup packets? We buy them. You got extra mustard packets? We buy them. Guess what? Those little sugar packets that you don't know what to do with after you've done all your coffee shit for the day, I buy them. But don't take it from me. Take it from some of our loyal customers.
Sal, honey, I've been having a problem. I made a casserole the other day, and I just have so much leftover paprika. I don't know what to do with it.
Lady, I have no idea what paprika is, but we'll buy it.
Howdy, Sal. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I like hearing your advertisements on the TV. The other day, Sal, I went to Taco Bell, and I got me the hot sauce with my taquito, and that sucker's just too dang hot. Can you help me out?
You know what, Cowboy Dan? We can. Some would say you're a pussy, but guess what? We'll buy your mild hot sauce packets, and we got some not as mild hot sauce packets. I fucked up with that.